Good evening, folks. Welcome to the Creation Science Hour. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson. We're live here in Pensacola, Florida, about a week after a little hurricane came through here. John, not too bad. And today's date is July the 18th of 2005, and you are welcome to join us on the program. We're here in the studio in lovely Pensacola. Most of the dead limbs are picked up. Still a few hanging on the trees out there, but that's just tough. They can fall off on their own. Let gravity bring them down. Of course, now, if evolution's true, John, they should just come back. You know, all the cells to make a leaf and plant are right there.
Mm-hmm.
I just add a little energy, and they should grow right back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that'll work. Anyway, we're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. The Earth is about 6,000 years old. God made it in 6 days, just like he told us in the Bible, which is 100% accurate. And the evolution theory being taught in our schools in violation of the First Amendment is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. No dumber idea and no more dangerous idea. And we're the folks who defend the Bible against all comers. And you can call and join us on the program. We have a lot of videotapes out there, about 1.3 million now that we've produced, plus who knows how many copies. Because we tell people, feel free to copy them as long as you're not selling them. Copy them all you want. You can do that. So you can join us here on the program by calling 850-479-DINO. That's 850 or 877, then it's toll free. Either one will get you through. 877-479-3479. For you alphabetically challenged folks, that is what Dino spells out on the phone. We like Dino. Our website is drdino.com, or our other website, dinosauradventureland.com. Or you can also instant message us. How do they do that, John?
That's over AOL Instant Messenger, which is the free little chat program that is pretty handy if they want to instant message us. That's the only one we're using. They can get that from AOL.com, and our instant messenger screen name is Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive.
There you go. All right, I got a very interesting website handed to me earlier this week. And, Jonathan, you went on. Tell me what you found on there.
It's called the Office of Research Integrity, which sounds like a very good thing. That's something that we should, you know, I would be more than happy to put my tax dollars towards something like that before the junk that they teach in public schools. And on this website, I went ahead and printed off some of the little, cases here. They do case studies of scientists from all around the world who openly admitted to using fraudulent material, you know, modifying their results to get government grants, and just blatantly outright lying to their supporters and sponsors regarding their, you know, investigations. And so they have just dozens and dozens and dozens, probably hundreds, of cases spanning from 1993 all the way till 2005.
You mean scientists would actually lie?
Yeah, blew my mind, too. I did not expect that.
And we got these guys calling in who think, well, there's science and there's religion, you know. And, you know, they say, why isn't your stuff put in peer-reviewed journals and all that stuff? That doesn't stop anybody from lying.
Yeah, if it goes with, you know, the grain, even if the grain is not true, which I'm starting to get some analogies mixed up here.
Yeah.
You know,
but
they could care less.
It's amazing how many textbooks are written. And on the front page, on the first few pages, it'll have a list of 40 consulting authors, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And half of them will say, we had nothing to do with that book. We never even heard of it. You know, they put their our name in there, you know, just to make it look good.
Kind of sit down and say, ah, you know, Dr. Hoban's name looks real good. I'll put that on my book.
Right. I mean, they just plain lie. Here's the case summary. If you want to check out this website about scientists that lie.
Now, this is not a creationist website.
No.
This is a government website, actually.
Right. ORI.DHHS, which stands for Department of whatever, DHHS.
Health and Human Services or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. .gov. ORI.DHHS.gov. Here's a case summary for Jason W. Lilly. June 3rd, 2005, in the Federal Register, Volume 70, Number 106. And it got the notes on page, big number, 32619. It says, findings of scientific misconduct to the Office of the Secretary. Summary. Notice is hereby given that the Office of Research Integrity, ORI, the Acting Assistant Health Secretary of Health, and another federal agency have taken final action in the following case. Jason W. Lilly, Ph.D. Now, Jonathan, he's got a Ph.D. They don't lie.
No, of course not. That was, you know, you remember the old cartoons with Elmer. He had a Ph.D., too. People just pronounced it Fudd.
Oh, that's
Elmer
right.
Elmer Fudd.
Elmer
so
Fudd. You're right.
It was Elmer Ph.D., actually.
I never realized that.
Yeah.
All these years, Jonathan, you've enlightened me on something. This is great. I should learn something every day.
He never once asked for a government grant to go out there and kill the rabbit, either.
He probably might have done it if he'd have gotten that.
Yeah. If he'd know that, you know.
But, you know, some of the Ph.D.s and Elmer would have a lot in common.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a whole lot. Okay. Here we go. Jason W. Lilly, Ph.D., Boyce Thompson Institute. Based on the report of an investigation conducted by the Boyce Thompson Institute, BTI report, the investigation report of another federal agency, and additional analysis conducted by ORI in its oversight review, and the U.S. Public Health Service, PHS, found that Jason W. Lilly, Ph.D., former postdoctoral fellow at BTI, engaged in scientific misconduct in research supported by the National Research Service Award, National Institutes of Health, NIH, Postdoctoral Fellowship, F32, GM64276.
Now, they say scientific misconduct, which is kind of a nice way of saying...
He lied.
Yeah.
Scientific misconduct. Like the politicians will say, well, I misspoke. I didn't really lie. I misspoke, right?
I'm going to start using that one, see if it really works.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I made a mistake. Instead of I was wrong. I was sinned, right? There we go. The case has been jointly handled by ORI and another federal agency under the government-wide debarment regulations. Dr. Lilly falsified Figure 4, presenting a hierarchical cluster analysis of differential mRNA accumulation in cells grown in medium deficient in sulfate or phosphate. Dr. Lilly further falsified Figure 4 in plant cell on the plant cell paper by falsely coloring two cells in the blown-up portion of the figure that illustrate the induction of high levels of mRNA from the SAC1 gene. Dr. Lilly falsified the supplemental gene array experiments. Dr. Lilly falsified the text describing Figure 5 in the plant cell paper. Dr. Lilly falsified the purported replicates of run-on transcription in
sprint experiments. You mean one guy did all of these things?
There's, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 or 8.
Now, of course, the evolutionists are going to call and say, well, this is just one idiot, you know, one moron, can't spoil it for all of us. But if they go on this website, they can see 12 years, I mean, dozens and dozens and dozens of cases over 12 years. I mean, it may even go back before 12 years. Of tons and tons of people who've done this because of the love of money. Which
these are the ones that got caught.
Yeah. These are the ones who admitted it.
Not only got caught and got prosecuted and something happened. These are the finished cases, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This does not count all the hundreds, if not thousands, of those that either did not get caught
or still doing it.
Or still doing it.
Yeah. They haven't got caught yet.
Like Professor Proch that resigned last February, you know, because he lied about the Neanderthal skulls, you know?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of it.
Anyway, the point is, everybody makes mistakes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But some people get this idea that scientists are got their white lab coat and their clipboard, and, you know, they're pure as the driven snow, and if a scientist says it, that's proof.
They're omniscient. Yeah.
What more do you need?
Well, you look at, you know, for example, whenever you talk to Massimo Pigliucci, and I'm not accusing him of anything, but who knows. I believe that, was it Massimo that was given $600,000 in government grants to study the evolution of plants, I guess? I mean, that's $600,000. What would a person who has no biblical convictions, you know, with $600, what would that drive them to
$650,000. Well, he was going to study the evolution of plants.
Mm-hmm.
And he found this little plant that normally produces three leaves. If he does certain things to it, sometimes it'll only produce two leaves.
Oh, my goodness.
See? Now, that's proof we all came from a rock.
Oh, wow.
That's how desperate they are. And he even got several times, he said he got them to produce four instead of three leaves.
You know, there was someone who used to help out here who was born with six fingers on one hand. That proves something.
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
That proves it's going to be really hard to get gloves, so they should live down south.
You know, that person's parents didn't get a bunch of government grants to make a few more kids with six fingers.
But see, six fingers, wouldn't that be an advantage? I mean,
probably.
Have a stronger grip. You could climb trees faster.
You could pick
up more leaves.
You could scratch your eyes, pick your teeth, and your nose all at the same time, plus, you know, wiggle your ear. And
you could get a job as a massage therapist and, you know, do the hour massage in 40 minutes because you got that extra finger.
Magic fingers, yeah.
See? Oh, man, they just don't get it, Jonathan. Well, we're going to do one of these cases every day just to make the point. We should have enough to go probably about 6 years on scientists who lie. So that doesn't mean they all lie, I understand. But I think some people have got this totally false idea that they put these scientists up on a pedestal. Wow, he has a PhD. He's a scientist. He would never do anything wrong. And he says, you know, evolution's true.
Must be.
Must be.
Yeah, I believe that's arguing from authority, which is, you know, we were watching or listening to the Hugh Ross debate just a few weeks ago on the program, and you'll notice how many times he always says, oh, I've got this latest paper, you know, I've always got this latest paper, have you talked to all the geologists, which are all, you know, blanket statements that mean absolutely nothing, but he refers to authority all the time.
That's his whole tactic is, you know, I have a PhD, or I have a thesaurus. I look at these big words I use. That's what a couple of our atheists that call in, you know, look at the big words I can use, you know. I have a thesaurus. Oh, therefore.
It's kind of hypocritical for him. You know, for example, he'll say, well, you know, astronomers believe this and that and that and this, and that's why we should believe it because the majority of them believe that. And we can point out, you know, probably close to the majority of secular biologists in secular universities believe in evolution. And by his own reasoning, that should mean evolution is true. And so that's kind of hypocritical for him.
Well, now, the majority of Muslims believe they should kill everybody who's non-Muslim.
Yeah.
That proves something to somebody.
It's got to prove that, you know, we should be Muslim.
Yeah. They don't get it. But we're here to help. That's why we have this program. And you can call in and join us, 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, extension 136, or instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLiv. Okay, we have a news article. I got a whole desk full of stuff here. Let's see. Where did it go? And I have a bunch of AIM instant message left over from last week. So we're going to try to get to as many as we can. Your phone calls come first, and then instant message comes second, and then all the miscellaneous stuff comes third, and emails come last. We haven't got to an email in probably 3 months, but we'll get there eventually. Who's on the phone there, John?
We've got Robert from, where were you from, Roger? Or Robert?
Wichita, Kansas.
Wichita, Kansas.
Robert from Wichita. I drove across Kansas. I didn't see anybody, but
I used to live in McPherson, which is not too far from Wichita.
Yeah, I've preached in Wichita a couple times. Go ahead, Robert. How can we help?
Yes, Dr. Hovind. I was curious. I recently read Thomas Malthus' essay on principle of population.
Yes, sir.
And I was curious about the principle he stated there with the population increase and the food increases by, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Right.
How does that relate to evolution particularly?
Darwin was extremely influenced by Malthus's book. Thomas Malthus wrote the book, and basically, to summarize it, probably to oversimplify it, Malthus said, There are more children born, more offspring, it can be children, can be of any species. There are more animals born or people born than can possibly survive. It is not possible that they all survive. Therefore, it is best if the weakest die off or are killed off. And so Darwin read that and said, wow, that's true. He talked about how the population grows geometrically while the food supply only grows arithmetically.
Right.
And so here's the problem. He's wrong, okay?
Sounds like a maintain human population below.
Right. Well, here's why he's wrong. If you have bigger population, let's take humans for instance, you now have more people who are able to farm the land. We've seen that in America. Just with what's happened with America, as more people are born, as the population of America has grown, we get more and better inventions, better ways of producing food, more people can clear land and get the rocks out and produce more food. The food supply does keep up with the population. Malthus was totally wrong. But boy, Darwin was really influenced by that. That was one of the major books that made Darwin come up with his theory.
Okay, so his principal increase with the population is more than actually is correct, right?
It's true the populations grow rapidly.
Mm,
it is not true that the food supply cannot keep up.
Oh, I see.
The food supply can keep up. For one...
Can keep up?
Oh, yeah, easily can keep up.
Okay.
See, just the United States could supply enough food for the entire world.
Right.
You probably could grow enough food in Kansas to supply the whole United States.
Right. Okay. That's where I was, kind of misled on it. I didn't know whether it, was the actual... I knew that there was an increase in population all over the world, but I didn't know, how the food increased like that. So that's what I was thinking.
Well, you got more people farming the ground.
Right.
And so... And with many areas, like in Russia, for instance, I don't know what it is now, but it used to be like 40 or 50% of what they produced was ruined or wasted because of the communism, There's no incentive to be careful. I mean, food rots on the ground. We'll be back after the break. You stay with us if you want, Robert.
Okay.
1 minute break. We'll be back.
Would you purposely choose to send a check to the pornography industry? Of course not. If you did, you wouldn't be able to sleep nights. But did you know that unless you use a Christian company, you'll never know if you're supporting the very things you despise? Programming on this station is brought to you in part by Lifeline Communications, a full-service telecom provider including long-distance service, filtered internet, wireless, business services, and more. Since they began, Lifeline has donated over $70 million to Christian ministry worldwide, just like this one. Lifeline's number is 1-800-511-4275. 1-800-511-4275.
Phone 800-311-2418, toll free, and your order will help support truthradio.com.
Sharon Bowes knew she wanted to work with children. After all, it's what she went to college for. It's what she'd spent the past decade doing. And she wanted to work in a Christian setting. She'd heard about InterCristo on the radio and gave it a try.
I signed up for the free listing. I wasn't very hopeful nor expecting much, but I received more than 90 listings.
Sharon's first choice was to stay in the U.S., but she also indicated she'd be willing to work overseas for the right position.
In less than 2 weeks, I heard from a Christian school in Egypt. I seriously doubt I would have ever heard of or even thought about a teaching position in Egypt if InterCristo hadn't connected us. My position is salary, which not only means I can go, but I can stay. God is good and knows what we need as well as what He wants us to do.
What does God want you to do? Find out if InterCristo can help you. Get online at InterCristo.com and see what opportunities are available to you. That's InterCristo.com. InterCristo, the Christian career specialists, a Christo ministry.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live, July the 18th of 2005.
And I'm stealing your magazine.
And you can steal the magazine. That's an interesting article. You can call in and join us. We're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. The earth is about 6,000 years old. God made the world in 6 days, just like he said he did. It got destroyed by a really big flood about 4,400 years ago. The flood explains the coal, the oil, the natural gas, the erosion features like Grand Canyon, and the thousands of layers of strata we find all over the world that all formed in the flood, or nearly all of it, in the flood in the days of Noah. And you can explain everything with the biblical creation, young earth creation, worldwide flood, worldview. I don't know of anything that can't be explained by that. If you know something, give us a call. We'll be glad to discuss it with you. So, and we believe the evolution theory being taught in our schools is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. So you can get a hold of us at 850-479-DINO, 850-479-DINO, or 877-479-DINO, 3466, and go to extension 136, and you will be live on the air. We only have one line coming into the studio. I guess we lost Robert over the break there. But Robert, if you want to call back in, if you didn't get a sufficient answer, please call back. We'll be glad to take your question. Or you can instant message us. Dr. Dino Live is our screen name at AOL Instant Message. AIM, A-I-M, AOL Instant Message. Okay, article, Jonathan. I got a whole bunch of leftover messages from last Friday. I didn't get to finish. I'll try to get some of them if I can. Here's an article from MSNBC.com. It says, fossil may be ancestor of most animals. Helmet-shaped critter dates back 600 million years. Article by Kathleen Wren on MSNBC.com. Washington. The earliest known ancestor of most animals may have been a minute creature shaped like a flattened helmet and barely visible to the naked eye, according to a new fossil discovery. The findings should help researchers understand how complex life evolved and may offer clues to the curious proliferation of new animals known as the Cambrian Explosion.
They're admitting there was a Cambrian Explosion?
I still want to know how you tell a rock is Cambrian.
I guess they just...
They don't have a date on them.
There.
I mean, how do you know a rock is Cambrian?
Mm-hmm.
They keep talking about this as Cambrian strata and Jurassic. And how do you know?
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, I know, because I taught earth science, okay? The only way you can tell is by the index fossils. That's it. So you have a clear case of circular reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
The fossils are dated by the layers, and the layers are dated by the fossils.
And here they are saying that this layer that they feel is Cambrian shows a, you know, a creature explosion in there that things just appeared.
All of the major phyla of animals in the world today, I believe all of them, if I'm not mistaken, appear in what they consider Cambrian rock.
Mm-hmm.
So why do we all of a sudden have dozens of different major kinds of animals appearing instantly? What did they evolve from?
I think they go on from there.
Okay. Despite these, the ancestors of most animal lineages first appeared during this episode of rapid evolution, 540 million years ago. The new fossils, however, lived around 55 million years earlier. How can they possibly know something like this? They find this little thing, you can barely see it, and say, oh, wow, that's 55 million years older than... Got a date stamped right on it, you know?
They were saying it's about the width of two human hairs put side by side.
And that's the daddy of us all.
Oh, yeah.
I thought SpongeBob was the daddy of us all.
I think if you go back further, it was SpongeBob, and that's kind of SpongeBob is, you know, his offspring. Of course, SpongeBob came from nowhere ultimately, which is pretty interesting.
Okay.
You know, we got the guy who calls in and says, like, I don't like Christianity because it talks about magic. Well, that's the ultimate magic right there, bringing a sponge from nothing.
Yep, they got it. Pretty desperate. It says, despite the animal's minute size, their biology was relatively complex. Thus, animals with a fairly sophisticated genetic toolkit may have existed well before the Cambrian explosion.
Look at this. Here's a creature that is the width of two human hairs, and they are still saying these things are complex. And they're 600 million years old, according to the evolutionists. When do these things get simple? I mean, did it just, you know, up pop a complex creature, the first one, and then life goes on?
This
blows my mind.
I understand. This summarizes it all. Look at this sentence here. What led them to diversify so dramatically in the Cambrian is still an open question. Duh.
They're sure they diversified, though.
They're discussing the wrong question.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when they found the soft tissue in the dinosaur bone here a couple months ago. They said, now we have to stop and reconsider how fossilization occurs.
It would be some special preservation thing that happens.
But, guys, maybe it's time to stop and consider when they fossilized, not how they fossilized. They just don't get it. One textbook I showed in my seminar, Part 4, it says, how life evolved from non-living material is a question that's open for discussion. I said, wait a minute. Is it okay to discuss if it happened, or are we only allowed to discuss how it happened? You know?
No, definitely not. The sky would fall if you even questioned it.
You can't even question that it happened. I mean, Everybody knows it happened. I mean, come on. They don't get it.
I mean, if we understood the importance of the subject, then we wouldn't have asked those questions like that. You know?
Hey, are we still recording all these programs to sell on CD, Jonathan?
We're recording them. You've got to get them available.
Put that on top of your list somewhere. You got a big, long list. Everything's on top of your list, right? Focus on everything.
The top is long, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The top.
Get that done, because people are going to want this. Why sponges don't shake hands. Now, there's an article, the same part of the article. Like most modern animals, the animals that emerged, they always use that emerge, like, they give human or living character traits to things like the animals learned to reproduce themselves. Duh. You know, they learn to change to something else. Why don't they do it today? Why don't you learn to grow a third hand, you know?
I'm trying. I don't know how to do it, though. You know, what would I...
You're supposed to learn. Just keep trying, Jonathan. Okay, come on. That way you could drive the moped and hold the can of Coke.
I can do that with my knees. It's just
but
kind
you can't
of
drink
awkward.
It.
Yeah, I can't drink unless I get a really long straw.
Really long straw.
Yeah.
Okay. Like most modern animals, the animals that emerged during the Cambrian explosion had two-sided body plans instead of circular ones. Bilateral symmetry, I would tell them what that is. That is, they had a left and right side, a top and a bottom, a mouth and an anus. The type of body plan is known as bilateral symmetry. So these animals already have bilateral symmetry, and they're in the Cambrian explosion. This article is, what, 3 pages long of this drivel.
And they're complex.
And they're complex. And now we need more research money. Is that basically how it ends up? Send more money. I bet that's it. Okay, we got a caller. The callers come first. We'll finish the article if time permits. Who's on the phone there, John?
We got Eric on the phone.
Eric, yes, sir. Go ahead. How can we help?
Yeah, Ovind, I was listening to Pastor John Lewis after your program on Truth Radio, and he was talking about the damnable IRS, and he says, listen to Brother Ovind and call him in one time and ask him what he thinks. And so I decided to take him up on his offer. Kent, what do you think about the damnable IRS?
Well, I don't know if I'd use the word damnable. The IRS certainly has a legitimate function. I've got the IRS code here right beside me. They're responsible for collecting income taxes on a variety of things. The Congress has passed legitimate laws that, I mean, I think, I've always said hundreds of times, everybody should obey the law, including the government.
All right.
Sure.
So you have no objection or anything?
I think they frequently act outside of the law, and that should be stopped.
Well, there's a very interesting case that just took place here recently, Eric. Joseph Bannister, who is praised as one of the most honest and well-established IRS agents.
He was the IRS special agent in charge of raiding people's houses and hauling them off to jail.
But he was good. I don't think he was doing the raiding houses and stuff like that, but he said that he did feel a little leery about some of the things they were doing. And after several years of working there, he quit. He just went to court with the IRS. And, Eric, you can read into this yourself and see what you think about it. And he beat the IRS.
Yeah, Joseph Bannister, B-A-N-N-I-S-T-E-R. His website is kind of strange, Blogspot.
Well, that's his blog. He's got another one, Freedom something, Freedom Income Tax Freedom, something like that. I don't know what it is. But, you know, all these people who deal with the income tax subject, they don't say take our word for it. They say look at the code itself. Don't
right.
take anyone's word for it. Just look at it.
So my position on the IRS has always been the same. If you should read the law, study the law, and obey it. If you owe a tax, you pay it. Very simple.
Uh-huh.
Now, don't get trapped into doing something you don't have to do. You know, everybody tries to minimize their tax liability. And don't claim to be something you're not, you know.
But just a quick question. Eric, if you were pulled over by a cop and, you know, the law said one thing, but he just felt like charging you for something completely different than what the law actually says, which one is your authority, the law or the officer's personal opinion?
Well, it's the law.
Exactly.
But
well, for the income tax situation...
Well, you know, I'm not going to justify it.
No, I know that, but
I'm
for the...
I'm just trying to poke at something here.
I know that,
because,
but for the for this subject, just check it out. Read, you can, I think they actually have the whole code book online or something. You can read the whole thing online.
Good luck. It's about like reading Greek.
We got two books up here that are the size of my Bible. The herniated.
Anyway, go ahead, Eric. You were going to make another point there.
Well, you often talk about replacing taxes with the church, and I don't know, Kent. I don't think that works.
I don't think I've ever said that. I think we should replace some of the government programs with the church. I mean, the church should be doing. The government should not be involved in welfare. That's the truth. We got a break. You can hang on, Eric, if you'd like. We'll be back after about a 1 minute break here, folks. Stay with us.
Jesus Christ, was he a true man? Answers with Ken Ham, co-author of the book, The Genesis Solution. Well, Ken, because Jesus Christ, the Son of God, became a man, would it be correct to call him the God-man?
You're quite right. You see, because the first man sinned, all his descendants would be cut off from God for eternity. We needed a man, but a perfect man, to pay the penalty for sin. And the penalty is death. But none of us could do that, since we're all sinners. This is why the Creator, Jesus Christ, became a man. Thus he was God and man, two natures, but one person. As a perfect man, the God-man, he could then die for our sin. And he offers salvation to each one of us absolutely free. Have you ever thought about the fact that when Jesus became a man, he actually became one of our relatives? You see, the reason Jesus could die for the sins of mankind is because we're all related. We're all descendants of the first two people. Christians who insist they can believe evolution have to face the fact that in essence they're saying that Jesus became a descendant of an ape-like creature. Now, this would destroy the message of the gospel. We had to have a perfect relative to pay the penalty for our sin of rebellion.
The theme of refuting compromise is what we're proclaiming this year, telling Christians they shouldn't believe in any of the evolutionary ideas. We can equip you with all kinds of free booklets on our attractive website, AnswersRadio.com. Log on to AnswersRadio.com.
www.truthradio.com. David Gibbs and his son gained some degree of prominence recently in the Terry Schiavo case, and they're good lawyers. These people are very well intentioned. They do a lot of good work. They send out a news release, a news letter. I got that letter. In it, David C. Gibbs Jr. had this to say, and I want to comment on what he said. Our founders would wince at the idea that the Constitution they wrote is somehow living and thus open to interpretation based on the shifting sands of societal change. Wrong, Attorney Gibbs. Wrong. They would not wince. They knew when they wrote those words that unless they protected those words would change. And that's the problem with our nation today. We need to set those words in concrete and do away with the practice of looking to precedents as some being authoritative.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live this July 18th of 2005, defending the view that the Bible is true and evolution theory stupid. And you can call in 850-479-DINO, extension 136. And is Eric still on the phone there?
You bet.
Yes, sir, Eric. Okay, you were asking about income tax, and my position, I think I told you pretty clearly, is everybody should obey the law, including the government.
Mm-hmm. All right. And I'm getting kind of a feedback here, if you can probably fix that.
Hey, we'll see if it's on our end here. Go ahead.
All right. It's kind of interesting that you should bring up placing welfare with the church. I mean, I don't see how you can really do that. I mean, you know, the church is kind of part of religion, and, you know, how can you really replace welfare with that? I mean,
well,
yeah, they can, you know, give out charity to the poor and such, but, you know, to provide money while people are trying to get back on their feet with a job, I don't, you know, it's more like a, seems like more of what government should do.
Well, Would you agree that there are dozens, if not even possibly over 100 countries in the world that do not have any welfare system at all? You're just on your own. There is no welfare.
Well, yeah, but okay. They're not in the best shape, are they, Ken?
Oh, no, I don't know. And
you do know. You do
no,
know.
I aren't.
Well,
I don't think America's in too good a shape either when, you know, like 60% of everything you make goes for taxes. But
60%, Ken?
Somewhere around 60% now, if you count all taxes. You know, by the time you buy a loaf of bread, there are 105 taxes on a loaf of bread by the time it gets to your table. The farmer got taxed on his land, he got taxed on his seed, he got taxed on his tractor, he got taxed on his gasoline, he had to pay tax for his helpers, had to pay tax on the property. By the time it gets to your table, there's 105 taxes. General Motors did a study years ago when a Chevy Nova was selling for $4,000, and they said, hey, if a Chevy Nova is $4,000, suppose there were no taxes anywhere. No taxes on the iron ore, no taxes on the iron mine, no taxes on the shipping, transporting the iron, no taxes anywhere. And they came back and said, we could produce the Nova and sell it for $800 and still make a decent profit. That's $4,000 compared to $800. So,
well, what does this have to do with welfare?
Well, that's just saying, you know, I don't think America's in as good a shape as you would like to think. I think we're going progressively further in debt is what we're doing. It looks good. It's like you got a new credit card every 6 months. Wow, charge max this one out. We just haven't seen the final bill yet is the problem. And we are bankrupt. We're in real serious condition
in
America.
That's something to blame, you know, the current administration on, but that has nothing to do with welfare.
I think they're all the same, Democrats, Republicans, all the same.
There's some truth in that, but, I mean...
As far as money spent, as far as spending goes...
You know, welfare, you know, itself is a good program. I mean, people like to drag out how people like to abuse it, like perhaps Social Security as well, but, you know, the welfare is pretty good. I don't see how you can harp on it.
I guess that you don't know anybody's been on welfare for months or years, and how it destroys families, and it destroys the work incentive. You know, why work? I can make more money by not working. The Bible says if you don't work, you don't eat.
Well, you know, welfare was reformed, and so it isn't exactly happening like it used to. People have certain time limits, and you know, people don't often abuse it like it used to.
Well, there's an incredible amount of abuse. Go to, in welfare, there's a website that keeps track of that kind of stuff. What's it called, Jonathan? Pork? Yeah, Congress, something about pork, how much waste there is in government spending and projects and stuff like that. Like NASA is basically welfare for engineers. You know, a lot of it is to prove the dumb evolution theory with NASA.
You can just turn on television, though. It's kind of like a little mystery television show, things like America's Most Wanted, but not really that extreme. They just go around and investigate people who collect welfare, workman's compensation, things like that, and are completely, you know, able. They put on like a little neck brace when they go out in public. When they get home, they'll take it off and do jumping jacks or something.
Right, yeah. Anyway, so the point is, Eric, of your call today about welfare or about IRS, or what was your question?
Well, I think, you know, before the ministry position
or
is
placing
love
the
your neighbor.
Church, really.
Yeah, okay.
Well, the Bible says love your neighbor, you know, even your enemies. Treat, you know, be good to them that do evil.
And what does that do when they lose their job? What does that do?
Where's the difference?
You're giving food to pay their house rent?
There's no question. There are a lot of legitimate people who have desperate needs, okay? They lose their job for a whole variety of reasons or lose their house. Things happen, okay? But the question is...
Isn't that okay?
Well, no, that's not bad, and that's tragic. However, the solution that you're proposing is... We put a gun to everybody's head and say, here, give me your wallet. I want 20% or 50% of your money so that I can go help these poor people. As opposed to asking them, would you like to help? It's no, you're going to help. And taxes are actually at the point of a gun. I mean, you have to pay this so that we can go help these people.
That's the way society has been forever.
Well, you look at what do you do with things? For instance, Scientific American late last year, I think November, it says, I think it's Karen Hopkins, said in Scientific American that, you know, once a person gets to the age where they're no longer reproducing any offspring, they're now a waste of time. They just sit around and sponge off their kids. So that's the philosophy that evolution teaches. You know, why even help someone if they lose their job? That's their problem. According to evolution, let them pick themselves up. If they got a broken leg and can't walk somewhere,
no,
fine.
Don't start bringing evolution into this. We're having a deep
Well, this is a creation evolution controversy.
And it does
bring
evolution.
You know, your worldview really demands
have compassion for each other, Jonathan.
What's that?
People what? Have natural compassion for each other. And
of course. Wait. But now, hold it. Now, you want, look at this now. Compassion is when somebody wants to help. They help. What you're proposing, though, is whether you've got compassion or not, I'm putting a gun to your head and I'm taking your money so I can help
you. We're not that. You're kind of just.
That's exactly what taxes are. They're taken at the point of a gun.
They go to everything. Ken, they don't just go to welfare. They go to education. They go to roads. They go to parks. They go
okay, but the concept itself,
military.
We put a gun to your head, we take most of your money, and we spread it out amongst many different places.
Yeah, the question is really very simple. Should the government be responsible for fixing these things, or should the individual people be responsible for fixing these things?
Well, you can't. I mean, no matter who you are, if you're out of the job, you can't find anything. You need support until you can get back on your feet. It's just a simple fact.
Well,
then you know, like, I'm sitting around being lazy. I'm not going to look for a job. Let's just take money.
Okay, so should everybody be required to help those who are out of the job, whether they can't find a job or they don't want a job? I heard, this is honest God truth. Today, somebody just told me that once they quit their job, they're going to go down to workman's compensation, but at the unemployment office and start pulling unemployment because they don't want to work.
Right.
There are people out there who do
that,
believe it or not.
Thousands who milk the system.
Well, they can't do that forever.
This is why, Eric. This is why if it was run by the church on a local level, each pastor's got 15 or 20 different people that he's helping, it's much more manageable than having Washington run it with 10,000 or 10 million people they're trying to manage. It can't be done. So that's why the church system...
it's not. It can't. You can't do it by a church. I mean, you could have biases and all this. I mean, it's a religion.
Hold on. If it was done the way the Bible says, you know, you can read Romans, read the four Gospels.
But not everyone believes in the Bible. That's where you can
not everyone believes. Not everyone believes government should fix it either.
The Bible says, love your neighbor, love your enemy, do good to them, you know, bless them that curse you. If that was the mentality that everybody did, if they were good to everybody, regardless how they treated them back, don't you think this would be a much better world? Don't you think people who are out there starving would be fed?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so regardless if people agree with the Bible or not, if we all went by that mentality, you just admitted that this would be a much better world.
Well, yes, but...
Okay, that's all I wanted to ask. Thank you.
Especially by Bible-believing Christians also, you know. Like,
well, here you just said the Bible suggestion for man's living would create a much better world, so that's all I wanted to hear.
Well, it's obvious, even if the Bible's not true, that the planet gives...
The standard
works.
Yeah.
It just plain works for society. Just including the standard of if a person commits certain crimes, he should be executed. That works. I mean, in societies that do that, it works. Crime rate drops off, you know, because they know, man, there's a deterrent. They're going to hang me if I do this, or shoot me, or electrocute me, or something.
I don't know. I don't know, Kent. Spending life in prison is kind of more scary than being executed.
I don't understand how we got this prison system. I read the Bible and see that certain crimes you're executed, other crimes you pay back four times.
What do you mean?
Why should somebody? Why should I pay for...
All kinds of biblical people spend time in prison.
Oh, yeah, but God never told people to have a prison system. It's true that countries have had prison systems for centuries, but that was never God's plan. Take a guy away from his wife and kids and put him in prison for 5 years. Now, I got to pay to feed him? Wait a minute. I didn't do anything wrong. How come it's costing me? You know, he should either be executed.
Wait, he's going to kill him then?
What?
He's just going to kill a man?
For certain crimes.
Committing a sin? I mean,
no,
we're all sinners.
Well, for certain crimes, which is what I've said three times here now, for certain crimes, yes, people should be executed. For kidnapping, for rape, for murder. I mean, the solution is if you execute them, now it's a real deterrent. You know, how many, they talk about this three strikes and you're out. What about the poor victim?
We look at just, I think maybe a month ago or something, I think he was older, in his older teens, early 20s, raped like an 8-year-old girl and threw her in a dumpster and left her for dead. And I think they just threw him in jail, threw him in prison.
And they should let the dad have him for 20 minutes. Let that little girl's dad have him for 20 minutes in a closed room, and it would fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Guaranteed.
Well,
if it's my daughter, it fixes the problem.
Is that what Jesus, Todd, Kent, I mean... Well, you're kind of so up on justice here, but you also have to think about forgiveness and compassion.
Well, as far as for the good of society, there are several different levels and ways to look at this. You have to have from the individual case level, you have to have what's good for society. God said in Genesis chapter 10 when they got off the ark, whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. God said you need to have a system of government where crimes are paid for. Now, yes, there's compassion and everything else comes in there. But for the good of society and for the good of the victim, I mean, suppose you are a 10-year-old girl and you get raped and the guy ends up going to jail for 2 years, and now you're 12 years old and he gets out of jail. And you're thinking, man, he's going to come after me again because now he's mad at me for putting him in jail. The guy should have been executed, and then the girl can have some peace and quiet the rest of her life.
You don't always know if the person did it or not. That's why they kind of have jails, is to put the person there. But, you know, if you execute him, you might be innocent.
Well, let me ask you a question real quick.
If he's innocent.
If you go to CNN.com, you can go right now. The very front page says, Rudolph gets life for Birmingham bombing. MSNBC says that this guy has no remorse, I believe. What do you do with this guy?
I don't know.
He committed some heinous bombings. What do you suggest we do with these type of people who have no remorse for what they did?
I don't know, Jonathan. I can't tell you.
Well, even if they have remorse...
I'm not a judge.
Now, listen, Eric, I put my money where my mouth is, okay? We have donated probably $60,000 worth of materials to prisons all over the world. Okay, we want to help, okay? I don't just talk about it. I do something about it, okay? And nobody makes me do this. I'm not forced by the government to give $60,000 worth of stuff away, okay? We do it because we want to help. Now, I visit prisons frequently. I speak in prisons a lot. I used to go every month to the largest prison in America in Vacaville, California, CMF, California Medical Facility. I went there every month and visited prisoners. So I do put my money where my mouth is, all right? Now, I'm telling you, many of the people in prison shouldn't be there. They should have either paid a fine or be executed for what they did. And even if they get saved and go to heaven...
What do you mean, pay a fine? What kind of justice is that? I mean, that's pretty bad. I mean, what about the kind of mediocre crimes in there where, you know, it's like, what do you do? You can't really shoot them, but...
Well, I would think that's why, no, the Bible has a list of certain things where you're executed, certain things where you pay back. Suppose, for instance, a thief knew his punishment was going to be pay back four times what I stole. I stole $1,000 from this guy, I got to pay back $4,000.
Mm-hmm. Well, you deal with a corporation that steal $1 billion and they don't, you know, have the $4 billion to pay back. I mean,
well, then whoever they stole from gets to own that corporation. They take over.
But more than the
you have to think these things through.
I understand. But I'm telling you, the basic principle given in Scripture is certain crimes, there were punishments of fines you pay back four times or five times. Other crimes, it was execution or beatings. But as far as prison, it ends up costing me for the guy to go to jail. I got to feed him now and feed his family with welfare. I didn't do anything wrong. I mean, they're punishing society. It's like, what, $100,000 per prisoner now, I think, is the average to keep somebody in prison.
You're leaving out all kinds of stuff. And I'm getting I want to ask another question.
Okay, go ahead.
I was curious as to why males had nipples.
Well, Jonathan had a great answer for that one.
That's on our website. It's been answered hundreds of times. Let me ask you a question. Yeah. Why do males have nipples in your view?
I don't know.
You don't know?
They seem kind of useless.
Oh, it's because so you can tell your front from your back.
Well, okay, now according to evolution, why would males have nipples?
It's an interesting question, but you'd think the ultimate designer would leave that thing out if they're quite useless.
No, well, there is a function for most of the time, but I'm asking you, according to evolution, why would males have nipples?
What would the idiots pierce? I mean, you see these guys on TV at the football games, and they got them pierced. I mean, they look kind of dumb just to pierce their skin. I mean...
Mm-hmm. And even if something serves a minimal function, just like eyebrows or body hair,
well, you really have to have a purpose or evolution. I mean, but
no, but
you know,
what would put them there?
Intelligent designer.
Let me ask you a question: did males used to suckle their young?
I don't know.
According to evolution, I don't think they did. Did all males come from females? According to evolution, I don't think they did. So then, where do you put male nipples? According to evolution.
I don't know.
That's a good question. So instead of asking, you know, why do males have nipples, the theory that you are a proponent of, you have no answer.
You're attacking me instead of answering the question.
Exactly. Okay, why do males have eyebrows?
Can't answer that one either.
Well, it keeps sweat out of your eyes. It's a very minimal function. Why do we have body hair?
Well, that is to trap heat and...
It does some very minimal things that you just don't know about. Why do we have a pinky toe? Another minimal function. Just because something doesn't have a life-changing function like the male nipples does not mean they're vestigial.
Because we're the deluxe model.
When you look at the two reproduction sets, you know, you have the Mullerian duct system and the Wolfian duct system, both very similar, male and females. They start off the same. You take, you know, men and women who are incredibly similar because we both start out the same thing. We're working from practically the same genetic material here. We're going to have some similarities. You know, why? We were just talking about one person who used to work at the ministry who was born with six fingers on one hand. Does that then connect her to Acanthrostega, some reptile that had a creature millions of years ago that had six, seven fingers? Of course not. You know, things like this happen. And there's no way to, you know, push evolution because evolution can't even explain it. You know, they still serve functions. They're erogenous zones.
There should be an explanation out there somewhere. I haven't really researched.
We've got an article on our website about that. Read that article about why males have nipples on our website.
Are you not going to really answer the question on this?
I already did. You know, first of all,
I
did.
Well, why do eyebrows exist? I mean,
they have a minimal function. Oh, hold on a second. Our nipples. No, hold on. Well, the answer, one of the answers, is kind of slightly inappropriate. They do serve as erogenous zones, which is a function. And plus, we are a copy off of a copy off of a copy off of a copy off of a copy of the original.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there was an even greater function such as that in the original.
Yeah.
You know?
So who knows? I mean, you know, some women are born with facial hair. Or not born with facial hair, but they develop facial hair, which is a male characteristic. You know, it's all because of design economy. We're both coming from the same little haploid. Well, we started out.
Maybe we didn't evolve from apes and this body hair, and it serves a purpose greater than that.
You still haven't told me how evolution explains male nipples.
I
already told you. Male nipples have a function.
Yet. You don't either.
No, I already told you. They have a function.
They have several functions, Eric. Okay.
They have several functions.
There are several different types of skin on your body. They're called the lines of Langerhans. You can look it up on an anatomy book, okay? And I'll talk about, you know, when people do skin grafting, they have to be very careful to get skin and grafted in the right way, okay? Because it stretches different directions, et cetera. Anybody that's worked at a burn center and done skin grafting will say, oh, it's very important where you get the skin from, and what there's different types of skin on the same body, okay? And there are several different types of skin that all meet right at the nipple. So that's like, I can find thousands of things on a car that serve minimal function, but they're just nice little things to have, you know? Well, check out the website and look at the article on there and read that. Yeah, we got a break here now, Eric.
If you've always wanted to understand a little bit more about law, but not make a deep study of it enough that you would get a degree or be admitted to the bar, but you'd still like to know just a little bit more than you have earlier learned, here's the perfect solution for you. We have received a number of copies of a booklet entitled Our American Common Law. This booklet is written by Howard Fisher and Dale Pond. If you'd like a copy, this just under 30 pages will really give you a practical grasp of what the common law is and how it fits into your daily affairs as it relates to courts and jurisprudence. Our address is Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. No price, just donate to Truth Radio. We'll send it to you. Thanks. Looking forward to hearing from you soon.
The Velvet Night was cool and crisp. At 6 years old, you almost felt you could reach up and tickle the moon, and the stars would laugh watching. That's when Grandpa gave you your first look through the metal tube. A moon that filled the view. Stars that seemed to almost dance. The sense of discovery was incredible. That same sense of discovery awaits you at BibleDiscovery.org. It's like looking at the Bible with new lenses. Whether you're a beginner or advanced student, there's a course just for you at BibleDiscovery.org. Flexible study plans and online helps empower you to study the Bible at your own pace, at your own place. No limitations, no deadlines. You've thought of everything, including a free sample lesson and printer-friendly courses, so you don't have to work online. Start discovering for yourself at BibleDiscovery.org.
right, folks, we're back. Reconnect. Hit the what?
Hit. Just close that and connect. Like
close
you
that.
Yeah.
And connect like I.
We're
want.
Dealing with some technical
problems. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live. Sign on. I'm John Sundine. This is. What's that mean? Shut that down.
Nope. You gotta go ahead and sign on.
I did. Auto. Here, come push a button for me, Jonathan. Am I on? What do I want to push? Sign on. Oh, okay, good. There. Good, technical problems. Disregard the last 5 seconds here, folks.
We just had problems with something that doesn't physically exist.
Isn't that strange?
That's weird.
Now, if evolution is true, this should automatically become a TV program. I mean, here it is, radio. Why don't they see the picture through the radio?
I don't know.
See? It should evolve.
Well, we do have little lights right here bouncing up and down, which is, I guess...
That's pretty cool. Yeah, the green lights go up, and when it turns red, you're supposed to panic. Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right. We're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory being taught in our schools is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth, and we feel real sorry for the people who have been blinded into believing such a dumb idea. We really want to help. It says your buddy list and buddy icon are not available, but they have not been lost. Please try again later. I guess AOL Instant Message doesn't want me to answer this one here today. We'll try again. Let's take some of the instant messages. You can join us here, I think. Well, you can still get in. At Dr. Dino Live, that's our screen name on AOL Instant Message, Dr. Dino Live.
DrDinoLive.
Or you can call us at 850-479-DINO, extension 136. Here we go. Adam Brow writes in, I have a question about your seminar. You compare the Cray supercomputer to the brain of a honeybee. My question is, how can anybody possibly know the capabilities of a honeybee? Excellent question, Adam. It is certainly an estimate. However, I think it's a reasonable estimate because in order to keep digestion going in your take a honeybee, while he's flying around, you know, looking for flowers or whatever they do, okay, he's also digesting his food like we are. This is a 24/7 process, okay?
And using up a bunch of energy.
Not only energy, but it requires, you know, where's the information? Something has to be controlling this digestion process.
Mm-hmm.
And that ultimately is the brain. We don't think about it, but it's happening. The brain is, it's like your computer. Right now, how many things are running on that computer that, you know, it's all kinds of things running simultaneously.
Yeah, probably at least 30.
Sure, okay. They call it running in the background.
Yeah, probably at least 30, and I only have one program open.
Yeah,
so
one program open, but 30 things are running. Okay. Probably right now, you and I are thinking about what we're thinking about, but we're also unconsciously breathing, so we have an entire respiratory system that is being automatically run by our brain. We also have a circulatory system that is automatically being run by our brain. So does the bee, okay? We also have a body temperature regulation system that is being automatically regulated by our brain. We have a reproducing cells to replace bad cells, you know, a repair mechanism going on. I mean, the brain of every living organism is doing a lot of things to maintain all these things. Plus, when you throw in flight, I flew a plane. I'm not a pilot, but I've flown a plane a couple times. People take me up and say, here, take the controls, brother. So I fly it around. There's a lot of thinking goes into flying.
You know, it's amazing. Some people who can fail, like calculus or something, are doing, you know, math in their head subconsciously that will blow calculus out of the water. I mean, if you just out playing baseball and someone throws a ball, it could be 100 feet up in the air, but you already start taking off in the direction that you know it's going. You know exactly how fast to run to get to its destination before it does.
Mm-hmm.
Put your hand up just right at the right angle, the right height.
You're moving and it's moving.
I mean, the stuff you're doing is just mind-blowing.
Right.
You don't even know it. I mean, three-year-olds can play, you know, baseball.
To get a computer to go catch a ball that you hit out near it someplace.
Would be tough.
It'd be really tough. Okay.
Yeah.
It would take a supercomputer just to catch a ball.
I went to, in 1998, I got to teach at the Illinois Annual Technology Conference in Chicago, Illinois. And they had featured a robot there that I can't remember who was making it, Sony or someone like that, was making this robot that's a bipedal. And the thing that they were really excited about was this thing can almost walk up steps. At the time. I believe now they can walk up steps.
My 2-year-old granddaughters can walk up steps.
They have poured millions and millions of dollars into this robot. We got to see it. It looked like a little astronaut, about 3.5-4 feet tall. It was really cool looking. But, I mean, this thing that they have poured years and years and years and hundreds of million dollars into still is just, you know, it looks ridiculous compared to Stephanie or something.
Right. So, to answer the question about the honeybee, if you think of all the different systems that have to be running in the background, for lack of a better term,
mm-hmm.
and how much how much computation that would take. How many bits per second of computation are happening to run the respiratory system, the circulatory system, the digestive system, the navigational system, you know, in addition to the fact that he's, you know, looking for flowers, his sense of smell, and all these smells are coming in and they're being calculated. Which direction do I fly?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How far do I go? The wings, the develop, you know, not just flapping the wings, but twisting the wings and allowing the wind, you know, and catching up and wind currents and sensing the navigational currents, for lack of a better word, by the magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
The bee's little tiny brain is processing all of this unconsciously. So that's why the estimates are it's doing about 1,000 million, is it 1,000 million calculations per second?
Bunch. I don't know what it is. It's a bunch.
That was just the estimate. I forget where that number came from, but that was the estimate that a honeybee can do about 166 times faster than a Cray computer.
And, of course, us just sitting here in these chairs is probably blowing that little honeybee out of the water as well. I mean, just listening to the sound, just interpreting the sound, working with all of our knowledge. You know, you got 50-something years of working with English. You've got all these words and sound, distinct, you know, tones stored in your brain that you're just pulling out in a nanosecond every time you hear them. And we're just sitting here talking on microphones right now.
Right. So, Adam, your question was, how do we know the honeybee's brain? It is certainly an estimate, but I think it's a reasonable estimate. Okay, the second question is, also, where did the number come from for the probability of one DNA arranged by itself is 1 times 10 to the 119,000th power? Oh, I'd have to look that up in my seminar. I have about 7,000 slides. Nearly everything, I'm going to say 98% of the things in my seminar, are referenced right at the bottom of the screen. You might try Walt Brown's book, In the Beginning. If I recall, that's where that came from, but I don't necessarily recall.
There was, the only thing I can remember really reading about was, I guess, the Creation Institute, or something, it was called something like that, on just the cell. You know, they'd take the different number of proteins and things like that that take place in the cell, and they could figure out by the different number of options they have, you know, what the chance of getting it all in one is, just like people can do with their PIN number. You know, your PIN number is just 4 digits, but it's so incredibly complex. You wouldn't think that someone can just walk up and guess your PIN number like that because it's 4 digits.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a protein or something that's, or just, you know, 100 or 200 or 300 amino acid links.
Right.
I mean, if they think that really just happened by chance, then why can't people just walk up and crack your PIN number if it's only 4 digits? You know?
Yeah. And if it was alphanumeric, instead of just, you know, chances of 1 out of 10 getting the first one right, well, now it's 1 out of 36, you
mm-hmm.
know, 26 letters plus 10 digits.
It gets really complicated.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, that would be, I guess, I would check Walt Brown's website, creationscience.com, or the book In the Beginning, his book for that. I think that's where he has all the references there, if I recall.
Walt Brown is a math man. He was a military physics professor or something,
right.
Wasn't he?
PhD in physics, taught at Air Force Academy.
Not a dumb guy. Smart guy.
Very smart guy. He's wrong about the canopy. But
well, even the smartest are wrong about
right.
something.
The only one right about everything is me, and it's hard, Jonathan. Here we go. BuzzUK243 writes in, as a Christian, I would like to ask the question in relation to the way how other relations have begun in relation to historical basis, possibly from the Bible. Thanks, Joe Burrows in the United Kingdom. I wonder if he means other religions. Oh, okay, here it is. Other religions. Got it. Okay. As a Christian, I would like to ask the question in relation to the way how other religions have begun. There are basically two kinds of religions in the world, okay? There are the do and the done. The do religions will say, you must do this, and you must do this, and you must do this. And sometimes they have a big long list, and sometimes it's a short list. But basically, you must do something for God to accept you.
And then there are some other ones where if you don't do that, you can pay...
Or pay somebody else to do it for you.
Pay someone else.
Pay the priest.
$2.95, and he'll forgive you for not doing it.
Pay the priest, and he'll go do it for you. Okay. The same thing, though. It's still a due religion. The other one, the other one's the done religion. It's already done. Christ did it all on the cross. We just accept it. Okay. So our salvation, according to the Bible, is by grace through faith. It's already done. It's paid for. Jesus did it. It's finished. We just accept it.
You look at somehow these things they spread, just like, you know, the fish story. I caught a fish this big, and of course, as the story goes, you can do this with 600 people, or 20 people, get them in a circle and just tell one thing to the person to your right, and as the story goes around, it might change by the time it gets back to you, and now you have something, you know, very different.
Right.
Of course, you look like the Muslims who hijacked most of the Old Testament, which looks like they've actually got some truth in their religion when they actually just stole it from the Christians.
Mm-hmm. Or the Mormons stole the book from Spalding, you know?
Yeah, they just start building onto this. I mean, with your imagination, you can create any type of religion you want. You've got people
Jim Jones or whatever. Let's all drink this Kool-Aid and go meet on that comet.
Well, if you study the history of religion, I think you'd have to start probably for modern times with Noah. Mm-hmm. They got off the ark. They all knew the one true God. The Chinese called him Shang-Ti, I believe, the one true God, the creator, the big guy, the ultimate, okay? And every different language group has a name for that. Almost every language group has a name for the one ultimate almighty God, the almighty.
The head honcho.
Head honcho, yep. Boss, Lord, master, God, okay? Then people quickly degenerated, probably within the first few hundred years after the flood. They degenerated into polytheism, i.e. there's a bunch of gods, you know, worship the trees, the rocks, the weather, the wind, the dog, you know, the snake, et cetera, the turtle. And then they get into atheism. Well, there is no God. Man, that basically atheism still isn't atheism. Man becomes God in that case.
Because of the polytheism thing, you know, all these people started planting gods in just about every object known to man.
Mm-hmm.
And so now these skeptical atheists can say, I investigated that rock. There's really no rock god in there.
Right.
And they
right.
start destroying this polytheistic mentality. You know, just because, you know, 99 out of 100 gods are fake, they feel that the next 100th one is fake as well.
Well, and it's normal for things to degenerate. That's the second law of thermodynamics. The same is true in religion. It degenerated from worshiping the one true God to worshiping multiple gods or no God at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you expect, you know, fallible man to propagate a religion or a story by himself without inspiration, then it's going to degenerate.
Sure.
Yeah.
There's a good book on this subject, Buzz UK 234, called The Long War Against God, written by my good friend and mentor Henry Morris in Pasadena or in San Diego, California. Go to ICR.org, or better yet, go to our website, drdino.com, and you can buy it cheaper. I believe we sell most creation books cheaper than anybody else, John.
We're not trying to build a castle. We're just trying to get the information.
Trying to win a war. Yep, not build a castle. Okay. He goes on. Buzz UK goes on to say, another question to you is regarding the actual length, day length, talked about in Genesis. Is it an actual day of 24 hours long? I found a verse which helps this question, John 11:9. Or is there not 12 hours in a day? This surely relates to the old-time system, no digital, so therefore no 24-hour clock. They would have used a sundial, for example, of 12 hours. Do you have any other verses or knowledge to support this fact? As a family member noted that many plants can survive a week or so without water and sunlight, many thanks, Joe Burrows, UK, a sincere admirer, smiley face. Okay, Joe, there are two kinds of days mentioned in the Bible. There is the day, which is what we would consider 24 hours. And then there's the 12-hour in the day reference from John 11:9 that you referenced here. Are there not 12 hours? It's the daylight portion of the day. I think it's pretty obvious to anybody, you know, when it says Jesus was in the grave 3 days and three nights, there it's referring to the three daylight portions and the three nighttime portions. But when it says Lazarus was in the grave for 4 days, well, then it's obviously referring to the whole thing, the day and the night.
Mm-hmm.
There are, if I recall, 1,800 references in the Bible that use the word day. I could find out real quick. And I,
these people that bring on the idea that maybe the days in Genesis are a lot longer than 24-hour typical days, which isn't exactly 24 hours, so no one get technical on us there. But they would really have a much better argument if they found some places in the Bible where a numerical, you know, value was applied to these days. Like in Genesis, it says the evening and the morning, which is usually specific to a real day, was the first day,
uh-huh.
The second day. Just the day alone, that can be equivocal, I guess. But you know, the context highly defines it. If they want something, then they have
right.
to show where day can mean something other than a day when it has like one, two, or three with it.
Now, Hugh Ross teaches that the day might be billions of years, okay? And he gets that. There's only one verse in the Bible that I'm aware of where it talks about the day of the Lord. And he says, ah, see, that might be a long period of time. Yes, Hugh, but it might also be a date. It might be one day also.
Mm-hmm. So there's the other one that he also quotes, which says, I believe it's in Genesis chapter 2, you know, it says, in the day that the Lord made the heavens and the earth. So he's also referred to
okay.
that.
Okay, yeah, Genesis 2, yeah. 4, I believe. Okay, I just typed in day on my God's Word for Windows, which is a free software you can download.
A good one, too.
A good one, too, yep,
yeah.
Free. God'sWordForWindows.com, whatever, I don't know. But it gave me 1,541 verses containing the word day.
Mm-hmm.
Many of those contain the word twice, like the very first one, Genesis 1:5. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and the evening and the morning were the first day. So the word day, yom, Y-O-M in Hebrew, I believe is used 1,800 times total, as Hebrew and the Greek New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
So they always mean a 24-hour day or 12 hours of the daylight portion of the day. No reason to believe anything other than that. So if you want to get God's Word for Windows, it's free. Download it and check it out for yourself. Okay, thanks for the question. If you want to get your questions in, folks, 850-479-DINO, extension 136, or instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive. Here's some left hanging from last week, Jonathan. Let me get as many of these as I can before we run out of time here.
We've also got this magazine. You showed me two really just amazing articles. The first one was that pig. Oh, my goodness. This is the Latest Creation magazine, which is a really good one. For June through August 2005, you showed me one in here, an article by Carl Whelan, who is head of AIG Australia, I believe,
mm-hmm.
and this is called The Holy Grail or Another Evolutionary Tale, and it shows a fossil with a backbone. Is this Precambrian, or is this Cambrian, or what is this? Yeah, it had long been regarded as Precambrian.
Here we got Precambrian rock in Australia,
mm-hmm.
and they find a fossil with a backbone.
With a backbone, and it's really cool. You showed me this earlier. They interviewed or they asked some questions to Dr. Ben Wagner, who you debated, and then Eric debated.
Eric, was it Ben Wagner you debated?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
I debated him twice, and Eric debated him once, and he said, I'm not doing this anymore.
So he got the Hovind family go-around. He was kind of passed around.
Why don't you debate him next time, Jonathan?
If he wants to, I'll be more than happy
He's
to.
Got a PhD.
He's famous. He's in Creation Magazine,
sure.
too.
I mean,
but he said that he would be willing to bet his firstborn child that it is not a backbone. Or not a vertebrae, you know. And then apparently they found out it is a vertebrae. So I guess we're going to have to go collect his... No, we're not going to collect his firstborn child. But later on in this article... So there's some Precambrian fossils with backbones.
But see, here's what will happen. Jared or somebody were going to call in and say, well, it must not be Precambrian. They must have misidentified the rock.
Or the thing slipped down and somehow got in there.
But see, how do you know a rock is Cambrian? How do you know? I've been wanting to find an answer to this one. Here we go. Crowdster fan writes in from yesterday, or Friday. I know you've been talking about why evolution is so promoted today in the schools and is the dominant view, supposedly. Oh, break time. We'll be back after the break and we'll try to do Crowdster fan and we've got a call on the line here. Hang on, folks. Back in 1 minute and 30 seconds.
One of the greatest helpers for Truth Radio in the past has been those of you who have signed up for Lifeline telephone service, long-distance service and local service, internet service, and now the Lifeline company, Lifeline Communications, is offering service through T-Mobile. If you have a cell phone or if you would like to have a cell phone service that really works and has really modern, neat equipment and a great approach to this whole business of cell phone, and you want to help Truth Radio at the same time, then may I recommend that you call 800, that's 800-311-2418, that's 800-311-2418. And tell them that you want to sign up for T-Mobile through Lifeline. Phone 1-800-311-2418. Your participation with Lifeline will help.
Thomas Jefferson wrote in 1798 on this piece of paper scotch taped here on the wall above my desk. 1798, after one of his own defeats, Thomas Jefferson wrote, a little patience, and we shall see the reign of witches pass over, their spells dissolve, and the people, recovering their true sight, restore their government to its true principles. If the game runs sometimes against us at home, we must have patience till luck turns, and then we shall have an opportunity of winning back the principles we have lost. For this is a game where principles are at stake. Said Thomas Jefferson.
And that's the voice of Garrison Keillor, PrairieHome.org.
All right, folks, welcome back to the final segment of the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live this, what is this, July the 18th of 2005. And who's on the phone there, Jonathan?
Yeah, David with us.
David, yes, sir. Where are you from?
California.
Oh, okay, yes. Same David called in before.
Yeah, you know, well, I haven't called in a while, so.
Hey, because you got convicted or got converted?
No, I got a job. I didn't get converted, I got a job.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know, I was watching I woke up this morning and I saw a little documentary on, have you ever heard of Oliver the Humanity?
No, can you get a little closer to your phone there? We can't quite get a good signal here.
Have you ever heard of Oliver the Humanity?
No.
Yeah, apparently there was, in the 70s, a chimp that actually could walk upright and walk around all the time.
Oh, yes, that was because of an accident, wasn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like the one that had a concussion.
Brain was damaged, yes, huh?
I don't remember. I'm just curious how you responded to that, you know?
Well, same thing happens to humans today. You can get brain damage where you end up crawling all your life and lose the ability to walk.
Yeah.
We go through a crawling stage and a walking stage, and chimpanzees can have a damage to the brain where they lose the ability to walk on. Matter of fact, I've got the article here. There's a good article about that in Creation Magazine.
Yeah, beforehand, chimpanzees already walk upright a lot.
Here it is, right here. This is from Creation Magazine, which is published, Answers in Genesis sells it. This is...
Hold on.
February of 05.
No, I didn't want a complete rebuttal. I was just curious if you guys ever heard about that at all.
Sure. I got a picture of it in my hand.
Okay, cool. Hey, I had another question. You know, I had a kidney stone not that recently. Do you think that's a result of sin or what?
Kidney stone is a result of a lack of certain minerals in your diet.
I understand that, but it's pretty common. Like, a lot of people over the age of 50 that I've spoken with have had kidney stones. I was just curious, like, do you think that... No, that's the product of God's creation or sin, you know?
Neither one. It's a lack of diet. It's a lack of dietary deficiency. You can't blame creation or God or evolution. It's you didn't eat the right stuff.
Oh, I see.
It's like if you don't put oil in your car, you're going to blow the engine. Don't blame the Ford.
That's true. Okay. Have you ever had any kidney stones?
No. I've had some friends who've had them, and I tell them there's this vitamin you can get, a substance called IP6, which is found in the brown coating of rice.
Yeah.
And it dissolves them.
Really? The web designer for Dinosaur Adventureland, when he first came down, he had a kidney stone. I had to drive him to the hospital. Things looked painful.
Oh, they're very painful, yeah.
Yeah,
it was. I remember there was parts where I actually was in so much pain my face got numb.
Well, IP6, just the letter I, the letter P, and the number 6. Go to any health food store and get some. It'll dissolve them out of your system.
Which is better than IP rocks.
IP6, better than IP rocks. Just remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Hey, also, you know how you guys want proof that people can come from a rock, right?
No, we say that's what evolutionists believe, but they won't admit it.
Well, if I could show you some proof of that, would you consider it?
Proof we came from a rock?
Yeah.
Sure, I'd love to see that.
Well, I have a friend of mine who came from a rock. You know, the Iraq?
Oh, that kind of rock. Iraq. That's good rock.
He came from Iraq.
That's pretty good. I met some guys at the airport today that just came back from Iraq.
Yeah. So is that proof or?
That's pretty close. Let me think about it. Before we cut you a check, I have to.
So it's no longer out of Africa. It's now out of Iraq.
That's it.
There you go. Very good,
we're
David.
All descended from Iraq.
There we go. Hey, thanks for calling. All right. Bye bye. All right, folks. If you want to be on the program, 850-479-3466, and you will take your calls here. Or instant messages, Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive.
So Saddam Hussein came from Iraq.
Now, there's a case where I would believe you. That guy, boy, the stuff they've done to their people over there, just absolutely cruel.
We had this magazine here just before the caller came on, and there's just one more article real quick. You know, a lot of the times the evolutionists, they really just can't even entertain the idea of carnivores and herbivores living without killing each other.
Right.
Or, you know, one killing the other. But we've got this article here from Creation Magazine. It says, Tigers and Pigs Together. And it's by David Catchpole. And it shows, you were just saying that apparently if a tiger is raised on pig milk, then it's not hostile.
It's not as hostile, and it grows bigger. They do it in some country over there. Was it Sri Lanka?
I don't know. I was just looking at it right here. But it shows also it's got two Rottweilers, a pig, and a tiger all in the same cage. Together, just hanging out.
Right.
I mean, that's absurd.
Sure.
It's got a pig laying down with a bunch of little cubs and piglets feeding from it.
Yeah, nursing the tiger cubs.
Mm-hmm.
And the article on the back, lions, tigers, and ligers. That couple, that lion and tiger, have produced like 17 offspring over the years. and the offspring, the female offspring, are fertile.
And they're not even the same species.
Lions and tigers and bears, oh my.
Oh my.
Okay. All right, here we go. Adam Brow writes in, good question about the days of creation and the word day to ask people who think that a day can mean something other than an ordinary day. Does day ever mean day? If day does not mean day, what does day mean? If day does mean day, when does day mean day, and does day ever mean day? Good question, Adam. I like it. You know, ask you, Ross, well, does the word day ever mean just day? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. How do you know which times it does, which times it doesn't? Oh, well, when it fits my theory, it does, and when it fits my theory, it doesn't. You know, got to fit the theory. That's the problem. Look, I'd like Hugh Ross. Nice guy, very nice guy. And I'm going to get him converted or try to, you know. He's not the enemy. He's a heretic, but he's not the enemy. I mean, you know, God loves him. I've got to use him in a great way. He needs to get converted, I believe. Here we go. A Crowdster fan writes in, I know you've been talking about why evolution is so promoted today in the schools and is the dominant view, supposedly, which I know it's not. But do you think there is a bigger thing going on here, such as a money trail, which keeps evolution as the only thing taught? Probably so. That's from last Friday. I don't know if Crowdster fan's still listening. Sorry about that. Love of money, root of all evil. There are people who really like this theory because it gives them freedom from God.
Look at all the money that you make from, you know, supposedly discovering missing links in evolution. I mean, I've got this article right here in front of me. How did fins evolve into feet? You know, fossil documents, gradual change in bones of ancient fish. And the thing that spawned this whole article was a small bone. It's apparently just a humerus bone from a fish-like creature. Just one bone. And you just think about, because this whole imaginative history and link that goes around this one bone, how much money did they just make playing with this little piece of cartilage, you know, whatever this thing is right here,
mm-hmm.
This little bone. They must have made tons and tons of money. And it's completely useless.
Yeah, follow the yellow brick road.
Even if it was true, it's completely useless.
Yeah.
And we're throwing millions of dollars to these things.
Oh, well, they don't get it. That's why we got job security, Jonathan. We're going to be here till we die. I mean, 100 years.
To the atheist dismay.
Right, yeah. Right. And then I got kids and grandkids coming up going to take over for me. So, hey, sorry, guys. Better start thinking about it. Here we go. KG4KFB, whatever all that means. This has nothing to do with creation-evolution debate, but have you seen the trailer for the upcoming of the King Kong trailer? I don't know. What's the King? Are they redoing King Kong movie?
They're redoing King Kong. It's amazing. These movies that are, you know, supposed to be fictional are getting even more scientific than the old ones. Now they've got giant creatures, you know, just like we've seen the fossil record, or put quotes around fossil record. They've also got man and dinosaurs living together in this movie, The King Kong, coming out.
Now, if they're redoing King Kong, does this mean Hollywood is getting desperate for material?
I have no idea. I saw the trailer. I'm probably going to go watch it, too. It looks really good. But it's even more scientifically, it's amazing. Jurassic Park is more scientifically accurate than more of the science that they're pushing today. You know, the
Even Fred Flintstone. Yeah.
Fred Flintstone, that's more scientifically accurate than a lot of the stuff that we find on MSNBC right here that I'm holding in my hand.
Right.
I don't know, it looks like a good movie.
Note goes on to say, it has a few dinos in it and thought you would like to see it. I love your ministry. Keep up the good work. Well, thank you, sir. I have not seen it. I did see the original King Kong several times as a kid, and I went to Hollywood where they have where you can take a little tour on the bus, you know, and they show the King Kong, you know, come out roaring.
Isn't Answers in Genesis, they're building their huge museum up there, ministry up in Kentucky,
right?
Don't they have, I believe one of their guys that works with construction of animatronics and stuff actually worked on King Kong.
Oh, okay.
So, it's of course, and this King Kong is coming out, you could see King Kong beat it out with a T-Rex.
Ooh.
Should be pretty neat.
Like that show they have on TV where they make the steel different animals. Who would win, a hippopotamus or...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or a saber-toothed tiger, I don't know, you know.
Hmm.
Somebody's got time on their
hands. Who can weld their joints stronger, I guess?
Who can weld their joints? Who's the better welder? Anyway, thank you, sir. I have not seen the King Kong trailer or the truck. To pull the trailer, so I don't know. But I hope it goes well. I hope King Kong...
There's a clear example of something Hugh Ross would pull. Did you see the trailer? Oh, you must be talking about a large object that carries, you know, cargo
right, or something like that.
No.
Now, are they going to do the same plot, basically, where they take him out of the jungle and they've got to protect him and the lady plays the piano and he loves the lady and picks her up?
I don't know. What they showed in the preview here is, you know, there's a struggling film director, and he's trying to find this actor within 3 days, or this actress to be in his film. And he goes to some scary island that people didn't even think existed, and that's where they find some tribes and some dinosaurs and some King Kongs and all this great stuff. So, I don't know. That's the official Creation Science Hour movie review from without even seeing the movie.
Just what I need. Go see. Now, somebody, I was doing a radio interview one time for radio a year ago, and they said, we want you to go watch
The Day After Tomorrow.
The Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah.
So you can comment on it The Day After Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it was 2 days later. So what an Al Gore special, The Day After Tomorrow. You know, save the planet, kill
global
all the people.
Global warming.
Global warming.
It was a neat movie.
Great special effect.
Yeah.
But we're, totally stupid plot. Real stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Hollywood must really be getting desperate. That's all I can figure.
Oh, they do things that tickle our imagination. Of course, with the whole Ice Age, you know, fact of history, they want to recreate some aspect of that because men just love thinking about it. Of course, they've got their timing all wrong and so forth. I believe in the movie there, they said the last Ice Age was about 9,000, 10,000 years ago, which is not true. The universe isn't even 10,000 years old.
They need us to fix that. Okay. Buzz UK 234 writes in. I have to hurry here, just last few seconds here. Thanks for the answer, guys. From looking upon this news article just released to BBC News in the UK, I was wondering what you make of it. Three suns.
Tatooine planet, yeah.
Oh, that's right. That planet has the three suns. They get confused over there what time of day it is a bit. I bet a sundial goes nuts on that planet.
Well, if it's anything like Luke Skywalker's home planet, they all stay, you know, kind of in a cluster. So,
yeah.
Your days are a little bit longer, your nights are a little bit shorter, I guess.
Okay. Well, the hefty planet is bigger than Jupiter, although it stays very close to its main star, 20 times closer, in fact, than Earth is to our sun. Man, if it's 20 times closer, it's a no-brainer, there's no life there. Secondly, I would be really curious of how they actually spotted this planet. Did they really spot a planet, or did they spot a star that wobbles?
They saw the wobble.
You know, as far as I'm aware, they have never seen a planet around any other star.
Mm-hmm.
What they do see is a star wobbling a little bit and conclude there must be a planet tugging on it.
There's Hugh Ross in your debate with him on the Ankerberg show. Just a lot of really goofy stuff, doesn't it? You even got it real clear cut. You said you're going to say this in front of God and everybody, that he claims to have seen the last star on the outside of our universe.
How can you know you saw the last star?
Star on the outside of the universe.
He said, we have seen the farthest star there is. Oh, man.
I'd like to see it. What's it look like? I mean,
what if there's one that's half as bright that's further out and he wouldn't know about it? How would he know he saw the last one?
That's Hugh Ross. You know.
That's Hugh Ross. He knows it all. Okay, here we go. So I would really question, I'm looking at this BBC News article, Mysterious Planet Baffles Experts, okay, with them starting with three suns. I would say, Buzz UK, write to them and ask them, did you actually see the planet, or did you see the star wobble and conclude there must be a planet there?
And either way, it's pretty much irrelevant, you know. I don't see the point of them. If they're trying to use this as evidence for evolution.
So what if there is a planet there? If it's 20 times closer to the sun, there's nothing living on it.
Yeah, you're not going to have life as we know it on there.
You got Mercury's only, you know, one-third the distance that we are, and there's nothing there, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really warm. Okay. Anyway, thanks for the instant message. Folks, you can join us on the program. Probably not anymore today, unless you hurry. Dr. Dino Live is our screen name. We'll be on all week, much to the dismay of the evolutionists. And you can contact us by calling 850-479-DINO, extension 136. Here we go. InfoMan 929 wrote in Friday, and I didn't get time to answer it. Hi, Dr. Oven. My name is Mike Brunstetter from Anchorage, Alaska. Hey, Mike, I'm coming up there in September, so come on to the meeting. Glad to hear your ministry is doing fine after Hurricane Dennis. We were praying for you. Two questions. Do you know anything about the cult Scientology? I did some research on it. Seems like neither science nor a true religion. Yep, you're right. Scientology is a spoopy. If I get time, Mike, we'll get to your question tomorrow. Listen into the program. Thanks for joining us, folks. And if you're not saved, look on our website, How to Go to Heaven. Man, don't miss that. See you tomorrow. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Something in my hand that I think you should own, and I'm not going to try to tell you that
you don't already have it, but you, I am confident, do not have it all in one piece, like you would if you owned a copy of the Citizen's Rulebook. Do you have a copy? Oh, this is in your shirt pocket, full force research at your fingertips, having to do with how to behave as a juror, the Constitution itself. The resources in here are just tremendous. And I'll be glad to send you a copy of this if you'll send me enough for postage plus a dollar. Whatever you want to contribute to Truth Radio, I'll send you a copy of the Citizen's Rulebook. Just get back to me at Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California, 93444, and it will be coming your way.
With Moments Together, here's Dennis Rainey.
Once upon a time, there were two porcupines. It was winter, and the porcupines were shivering from the cold. The porcupines decided they could share their body heat if they moved closer together. The porcupines moved closer and closer until their quills pricked each other, and they moved away only to freeze to death in the February cold. Sometimes being close to your mate can be painful because intimacy extracts a price. The closer I get to Barbara, the more she becomes aware of who I really am, and that can be painful at times. The more transparent I become, the greater the possibility that she will reject me. How about you? Do you have some quills? Does your mate? Ask God today in prayer for openness and intimacy in your marriage, the kind that will create a warm sense of belonging to one another.
Moments Together with Dennis Rainey is made possible by Regal Books, the Moments Together devotional series at Christian bookstores or regalbooks.com. Thank you.